Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, July 19th, 2015. This is episode 1204. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Yes, I confess. This is the show where we get together, we talk about things with chips in them, with computer chips, not potato chips in them. Things like, computers, yeah. Although that could mean a lot of things. Right now, you've got probably a computer in your pocket that's more powerful than a mainframe computer of 20 years ago. Your smartphone. Some of us even have a computer on our wrist that's more powerful than the computer on the Apollo 11 lunar module. Hey, speaking of space, pretty cool with the Pluto thing, right? An interesting story. We talked yesterday with Kelsey, was it Singer, I think, one of the planetary scientists working on New Horizons. She was, you know, she's a geologist and an astronomer. It's a perfect combination because there's a lot of geology involved in this. The New Horizons was launched 9.5 years ago, slingshotted around Jupiter to gain speed. And actually, everybody's saying, wow, that's a fast trip. 9.5 years to get to Pluto. And what amazing pictures. But she said something that surprised me. We only have about a 50th of the stuff we're going to get from New Horizons. Now, New Horizons has already gone past Pluto, is on its way out to the Kuiper Belt and boldly going where no spacecraft has gone before. But as it travels, it will continue to send information back. And this was kind of cool. The images that we've seen of, for instance, of Pluto aren't the best images we're going to get. There are better ones still to come. Yeah. Wow. The New Horizons spacecraft itself is running a processor. Well, if you think about it, it has to be a 9 or 10-year-old processor, right? It's the same processor. It's a cell processor used in the PlayStation 1. I mean, that's not, they didn't take it out of a PlayStation 1. No, but it's roughly the same processor. They don't want to really put fancy, fast processors in these things because cosmic rays and stuff. They have to be specially kind of bulletproof processors and even maybe a little slow and redundant so that they won't, they'll be more robust out there in space. Decade-long mission. To boldly go where no craft has gone before. So now it's slowly sending back information to us. And I'm going to find the article here because it was kind of cool. It's very slow, but think about it. It's a long way away. So the Pluto data will come to us dribbling in for some time to come. Already scientists are saying, wow, this is in some ways, I think they use the phrase, not easy to explain. We got some interesting stuff. It is 3 billion miles away. So we're talking 32 times farther than the sun is from us. So the data can't go super fast. We're not talking megabit speeds. It's about 600 baud. You remember your old modem, your 300 baud modem, where you put the... You're too young. But some of us, the older folks, remember, you take the phone, you're going to call Genie or MCI Mail or CompuServe. You dial the number, and then the phone will go... And you quickly, you jam it onto these acoustic cups. And that was your modem, and it would talk to it. And that was 300 baud, 300 bits per second. So this is about twice that. But you remember how slowly text went across the screen. A picture, a high-res picture, that's going to take forever. Sometimes it's even a little faster, 1,200 baud. It takes 2 hours to download a picture of kind of cell phone quality. So the data that the pictures that it took of Pluto as it flew by are going to take as much as 16 months to get here. So we're talking a lot of data still to come, a lot of information, and even the best pictures yet of Pluto won't be here for months. Months! It's kind of cool. It's kind of amazing. And of course, you know, one of the reasons they don't put like a Dell PC in there is a Windows PC or a Mac or something in there is because if it crashes, you can't go up there and reboot it. It needs to be, imagine writing the code, the programs, knowing that that has to work because it's now billions of miles away. And if it doesn't work, well, no. You're not going to send the Geek Squad up there. The little Best Buy Volkswagen is not heading to Pluto. Amazing. It's so cool. We live in interesting times, don't we? It's a Mongoose 5, says Mike B. in the chat room, the processor. It's 12 megahertz, radiation hardened. It is a similar to a MIPS R3000 CPU with multiple clocks and timing routines to prevent faults and downtime. Well, I wish I had a Mongoose 5 in my computer. I like it. If we know how to make fault-free computers, I think we should start doing that now. I'd be out of work, but YouTube had a big, Google, did you see what happened on Friday? Google stock skyrocketed because Google unexpectedly reported profits well beyond what anybody on the stock market expected. And one of the bright lights for Google is YouTube. Do you watch YouTube? Among 18 to 49-year-olds, which is a demographic group that advertisers really like, 18 to 49, they have seen huge growth. The average mobile viewing session on YouTube, more than 40 minutes. And more 18 to 49-year-olds watch YouTube in the U.S. than any cable network, than the ESPN or anything. Now, this is a little bit of a funny stat. The number of channels on YouTube, providers, people who do content, like PewDiePie, that earn a six-figure income, that's $100,000 or more, is up 50%. That's kind of meaningless because if it were two yet last year, there'd be three this year. So who knows what that really means. But some people are making money. The global watch time is up 60%. The fastest growth we've seen, said Google, in a couple of years. Google had revenues of $17.7 billion, considerably up over the same quarter last year. And their income, almost $4 billion in 3 months. Nice work if you can get it. Shares went up like 8% on Friday. Whew. Anyway. I didn't even say the phone number yet. Let me tell you the phone number. Let's get those calls going here. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, is ready to answer your questions. 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype to call. We often get callers from around the world thanks to this newfangled thing called the internet. 888-827-5536. We also have a website, which is a good thing to note down. I'll talk about stuff and on the show give solutions, suggestions, products to buy, but you might say, oh, I can't. Hold on. I don't want to write that down. Don't worry. I got somebody writing down for you. James DeRuvo. Thank you, James, is writing this all down for you. We put it up on the website, We put audio and video after the fact so you can listen, you can read the answer, you can even add your own thoughts and comments, which is very nice if you want to do that. Free of charge, no sign-up required, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. That's, I guess, all I need to say. Get those phones ringing because we're going to answer your questions next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I had this great article, which I lost. Well, all of that stuff.
So, you know, processor's more than 9.5 years old.
Huh? Yeah, well, you had it, but it's,
it takes like 5 years.
But if 9 years ago we had a processor that didn't ever crash,
well, it takes.
Why were they holding out on us?
You don't want that processor because it's 4 years old by the time it never crashes. Yeah, I know. You want a processor 4 years old?
I want a Mod Goose 5.
So it's more like, you know, 13, 14-year-old.
Yeah, processor. No kidding, yeah. What's up with my clock, says Sharpay UK. People are fascinated by this clock. There's far more traffic in the chat room. No, it's the battery's dying. See how it's a little dim?
Oh, yeah.
There are far more people in the chat room talking about my clock than anything else.
At least they stopped talking about your hair.
That's right. I'm not bald anymore. Really interesting article in the New York Times. There's a guy called the Haggler. I guess he's he goes and makes deals. And he needed a passport photo, and he went to a drugstore on Times Square. What was it, like Target or something in Times Square? And they had a photo booth on the second floor that was, and there's a button that says passport photo. So he went in there, and it took the picture, but it cut off the top of his head. And he thought, oh, I'm too tall. So he went down like this. It still cut off the top of his head. He got as low as he could go, and it still cut off the top of his head. And so he goes down the stairs, and the employees say, yeah, we'll just take it manually. And he gets his passport photo. But he's curious, so he writes to the company that makes – first he writes to Target or whoever it was. And they give him the runaround. Finally, he contacts the company that makes the machine. It's the only one in the country. And the guy says, yeah, we have software that figures out where your face is, and we base it on your eyebrows. But apparently we didn't know this, but if you're bald, it has trouble. And he said nobody ever complained. There you go. That was a long story with no payoff. We never change a battery on that clock. Well, that clock is running a Mongoose 5 processor. I think we should just do the show that's Leo's clock, the show. This Week in Leo's Clock, Twilk. And just put the clock on camera. I bet you there'd be more chat activity.
What's going on with the clock now? What time is it now? Wait a minute. It's 30 seconds off. No, it can't be. What's wrong?
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, is here. Hello, phone ranger.
Greetings.
She's, you filled the lines up.
Sure did. Not a problem with all your great callers.
Wow, there's a lot of them. Who should I talk to first, you think?
Well, Catherine in Apple Valley held on quite some time.
She was here
program.
Yesterday.
You remember.
I'm sorry.
And
has she been on hold since then?
Can't watch her Netflix, so let's...
Oh, my goodness. Hi, Catherine. I'm so sorry. Thank you for calling back.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well. I'm sorry we didn't get to you last time.
That's no problem. I do have a question. We have Verizon, which we've had Verizon Internet for a long time, and they've always told us that we have the largest speed available. Well, it comes to find out we only have 1 megabyte per second. Found that
megabyte out. Or bit?
Megabyte. 1 Mbps.
Is the B a big B or a little B?
A little.
Little B is a bit.
I'm not quite sure.
That's terrible, by the way.
That is terrible.
That's terrible. One megabit per second is not enough to do almost, I mean, you could send and receive email. That's like what we had on the cruise ship. That's terrible. You do not have a Verizon's fastest feed. You said it's Fios?
No, it's not Fios.
Oh, it's Fios. DSL.
We don't have Fios available. There's no cable.
Here's the deal with DSL. The farther you are from the phone company building, what they call the CO or central office, the slower DSL gets. And they probably told you. I hope they told you when you signed up. Look, you're 2 kilometers or more away. The best we're going to be able to do is this.
And we're also on a shared line as well.
You're on a shared phone line?
They call it a shared line because I know before when they went to disconnect us, the phone line. They actually ended up disconnecting the internet, and it was a while before we were able to connect it again.
Yeah, that's how DSL works. DSL is the internet service provided by phone companies over phone lines, those two copper lines that come into your house. And then you put a filter on there so that you don't hear any noise coming from the DSL. It turns out there's enough extra room on a voice line to put data. And in fact, if you're close to the central office, it can be quite fast. But I take it you're not.
No. So that's the problem. We're trying to figure out what to do because my dad would like to do Netflix. We got an Apple TV to do Netflix. And of course, Netflix won't run because there's not enough streaming available. Yeah. So we were looking at possibly doing satellite, but I wasn't sure if you had any other ideas because I also tried the DSL.
You're in a situation a lot of people in the country are where you're in a somewhat rural area. You don't have cable, I presume, as an option, cable TV.
No.
You don't have, and you're far from the phone office. In fact, you're lucky you can even get DSL. You're probably right on the edge. At that speed, you're right on the edge of what's possible.
Okay.
And so the only other choice is some form of wireless internet. You've correctly picked satellite as one of those. There are others.
Are the other options?
Well, it just depends what's available in your area. But there are wireless internet service providers in some areas called WISPs, and they use a variety of different technologies. Of course, one wireless that you probably also have available to you is from the cell companies, right? Do you have a cell signal?
Yes, I do.
All right. And you can see how fast, if you have a smartphone, your cell data is.
Yes.
And that's probably faster than a megabit.
Yes, most definitely.
Okay. And how fast is it? Have you checked with a speed tester of any kind?
No, not on my phone. I have not.
Yeah, I mean, that would be one thing to do. Download on your phone, Android or iOS. They have speed testers that you can use. Speed test is the best known. And you can run it, and you can see. Now, if you want to watch Netflix, for instance, on your Apple TV, you probably should have a consistent 5 or 6 megabits down.
Okay.
So, and of course, if you want to watch high def, it should be 10. If you want to watch ultra high def, it should be 15. But you should be able to watch Netflix at 5 or 6. Now, there's an issue with cell providers because they usually cap the amount of data you can watch. And you start watching Netflix, you can be doing as much as, you know, a gigabyte a day, a couple hours a day. You could easily do that.
Wow. Is there a particular...
So I'm just saying for Netflix, it's probably not the best choice, but it's something to look into. That's one option, you know, and you can write down the price and see how much it is per gigabyte and all that. The other option you mentioned, satellite, is also available to you. The one I recommend is called Exceed from Wild Blue. And it's the best of the satellite providers out there. The drawback on satellite is you have to buy some expensive equipment, a dish, a decoder. They often have limits on how much data you can use a month. Sometimes they'll throttle you. You should always investigate before you buy what it's going to cost, what I'm going to get. But in most cases, satellite internet will be fast enough to give you a Netflix.
Okay.
But you may run up against some limits, you know, after a few weeks. They may say, okay, no more Netflix for you until the first of the month.
Wow. Yeah, because right now our wireless is unlimited, so I'm not familiar with it.
There is an interesting term used in the cellular industry called unlimited that does not mean the same thing to them as it means to you and me.
Right.
To you and me, unlimited sounds like I could have 100 gigabytes. No. So, in fact, AT&T has just been fined the largest fine in the history of the Federal Communications Commission for implying that unlimited meant unlimited data. It doesn't. I mean, it does. Technically, you're not going to run out of data, but it's going to, after 5 gigabytes, in most cases, they slow it down so that you not only couldn't watch Netflix, you really wouldn't want to use it at all. It's very, very slow.
Okay.
So they say, but it's still unlimited. You're still getting data, but it's just slow. And the FCC said, Ian, that is not, I do not think that word means what you think it means. And so they fine them hundreds of millions of dollars, I think. So,
oh, my goodness.
There is, so I think when you, who is it, AT&T?
We have Verizon.
To my knowledge, no cell company provides real unlimited data. T-Mobile, maybe. Every time I go in the store, I say, come on, no, it's throttled, right? No, it's unlimited. No, it's going to be throttled, isn't it? No, it's unlimited. So, but Verizon certainly does not offer an unlimited plan that's truly unlimited.
Okay.
So you need to, this is the problem. Consumers have to really kind of do some research and read between the lines. There's fine print at the bottom of the Verizon thing that says, after 5 gigabytes, you'll be slowed down to unusable bandwidth speeds.
Okay, so do you think in our situation a satellite would be best then?
Probably the fastest. Now, there's problems with satellite. For instance, Skype, video gaming, things like that are not great on satellite because you have to send the signal all the way up to the satellite and it comes all the way down. That's called latency. And it's terrible for phone calls. You know how it is. Sometimes on CNN, they're talking to Baghdad and they say, John, what's the situation there? One, two, three, four. That's what you would get. But for Netflix, who cares? That's fine.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would look at WildBlue. That's pretty good speed.
Okay. And you have to purchase a dish and a decoder?
Yeah, sometimes they subsidize that. They'll tell you, go online, you can look it up, and they'll tell you, if you're patient, you can look it up, and you'll see how much it's going to cost up front and how much it's going to cost per month. It's not a cheap solution, but it's for most people in rural areas, it's the only acceptable solution. And this is a problem. The FCC wants to address this. They have a national broadband plan because they say that broadband is, I can't raise it, something like 10 megabits per second. You have to have that, and they want to get it to every person in the U.S., and I applaud that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Really? So there are seriously grandfathered unlimited data plans on Verizon that are not throttled? Really? See, Verizon has been spanked by the FCC so many times that maybe they're behaving. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada or L.A. That's where John is. Hi, John.
Hey, Leo.
How you doing?
Leo. Okay, great. I've been a longtime Apple fan, but I'm a little annoyed to say the least. I upgraded my 4S iPhone to 8.4, and my email does not work anymore. The Apple email does not work. Every time I push the mail, it just goes blank. So I want to know if you have any suggestions and or is there a way I can download and back up everything on my iPhone, including voice memos? Because I have a lot of stuff on my phone.
Okay, a couple of things there. First of all, how old is that 4S? Let me think. Current one is 6. Before that was the 5S. Before that was the 5. Before that was the 4S. So it's 4 or 5 years
old. I think it was still in this century, though.
Actually, I think they're still selling it. That's their no-cost phone, isn't it? So they really do have to support it. If you've listened to this show, you've often heard me say, be slow to do operating system upgrades on old stuff. This is particularly true of smartphones.
I thought the 8.4 was one that fixed it.
Did it fix it?
No.
No.
Actually, it made it worse.
Yeah, didn't it? Well, there's a couple of things you can do. It's supposed to work on it, of course. They wouldn't have let you install it if it weren't. You might want to reset the phone, but you want to back it up first. There's a couple of things you have to do. Of course, you connect it to iTunes. You turn on your iCloud backup. I'd rather do it to do you have a computer that can run iTunes?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd back it up to iTunes. And that'll be a full backup, but it will not include voicemail. Is it visual voicemail, or do you actually have voicemail on the
phone? I'm talking about the voice memo app.
Voicemail. Those will be backed up.
Okay.
In fact, when you hook it up to iTunes, you will actually be able to, you could see those voice memos and copy them, if you wish, into your iTunes.
Okay.
So if you want to be extra sure, I'd do that first, listen to them in iTunes. Yes, I got them on your computer, and then do the backup. And now, I would do a full restore on the phone. I would start over, because 8.4, most people say 8.4 works on a 4S. So it just sounds like... but any operating system upgrade can do this.
By the way, it's doing the same thing almost on my iPad, too.
Yeah. I'm sympathetic because nobody should have to buy a new iPad. It works just fine, or a new iPhone if it works just fine. But this is Apple. And Apple caters to a market where people buy the latest stuff. And they have never done very well with older hardware. A lot of people in the chat room are saying, though, that they use 4S's with 8.4 and their email's working fine. Everything's working fine. So it sounds like you just had some bad luck. And so redoing the phone, you know, starting over, erasing it and starting over as if it came from the factory, that's going to and that often is the right solution. It's, you know, even when we talk about upgrading Windows or OS 10, we often talk about a clean install, right? You don't want bits of the old system lying around. So this would be a clean install on your phone. Back it up first, and then you can restore the backup, and everything that you had on the phone, including apps and data and settings, will be restored.
Love your show, Lita. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for the call. Yeah, I don't think there's any global issue with 8.4 on an iPhone 4S. And as I said, Apple's continued to sell the 4S. You could have a brand new 4S. So it ought to work. But it is a much slower processor. It's much less memory than the later machines. Not just storage, but RAM. And so there could be issues. Always a good idea, if you're having problems, do a clean install. And do what you did, which is check with other people. Say, are you having trouble? And I can tell you from the chat room, at least, and from Apple's message boards and so forth, people are doing it with success. Rick in Oxnard, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Leo. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
I've been listening to you for a long time. As a matter of fact, I think I had a Mongoose chip in my first computer.
You have the Mongoose 5? Because that's
I had actually it was one of the George Morrow machines, the CPM.
George Morrow was one of the greats in the computer industry, and those Morrows were wonderful.
Oh, I loved it, and then I went to the Osborne sewing machine.
Yeah, well, you're an old timer if you remember the Morrow. Yeah, George is no longer with us, but he was great. He was one of the things George always said is, if you need software, you should write it yourself.
Absolutely.
Those were the days.
Anyhow, here's my question. I'm a TiVo guy from way back. I had a TiVo 3. It just took a dump. I think it's the power supply. I decided to dump it. I bought a new Romeo. Now, I also have in the main living room a TiVo Premiere. Now, the problem I'm having is streaming. The TiVo 3 had no problem streaming between the Premiere, but the Romeo won't do it. So I'm trying to debate whether or not to put a Mocha on the Romeo, because the model I have does not have the Mocha built in, but the Premiere does.
So anybody just tuning in, he just said he wants to put a Mocha on his Romeo. Yes, he did. Yes, he did. And you know what? It's makes sense. So Mocha is actually kind of cool. It's using the internet over the big coaxial cable that you've already got installed in your walls for your cable TV. And it's much better than trying to do it wirelessly. You have a Romeo Pro, right?
No, I have the baseline Romeo, which doesn't have Mocha built in.
Okay, and it doesn't have streaming built in either.
No, but I have a stream on the system also.
Yeah, and so that's the way to do it, is to use the TiVo stream and use the TiVo app.
Right.
And then you can get that anywhere. So it doesn't, the model you have doesn't have that cool Romeo streaming capability built in, but it does have, using a TiVo app, it does have that
capability. Well, you know, TiVo says it doesn't, but if I have a non-high-def video on my Premiere, it will stream over Wi-Fi. But when it gets into high definition, it just doesn't have the speed on Wi-Fi.
And Mocha should make that better.
Okay.
I'm thinking about doing it. By the way, this is a timely call. I use a Romeo Pro in my office, and I love it. And we fell for Comcast's Xfinity X1 pitch, you know, the latest, greatest stuff. Right. And it kind of is like a TiVo. It has a centralized recorder, and then there's satellite units all around that supposedly, and it has never worked right. Yeah, I have to reboot it all the time. It stutters. It's a terrible, terrible piece of hardware. So my wife is saying, you better get me a TiVo. So I'm trying to figure out since I have a Romeo Pro, what's the best way to do this in the gym? And I think I'm going to do what you did, which is use Mocha, which is basically like hardwired networking, using the cable coax. And a little Romeo unit in the gym.
Now, how do I keep my neighbors who are on cable from getting in true.
No, the mocha won't. Don't worry about that.
No?
I don't think. No, you're safe. You're isolated from them, just as your internet data, if you had a cable internet service provider, would have be isolated from your neighbors. I wouldn't worry about that.
Because I see they have filters.
Yes.
And I didn't know if I needed to use a filter.
It'll do it automatically.
It'll do it automatically.
Yeah, between the houses. They don't,
and,
yeah.
And then the other question is, because I use a Linksys 1900 AC router. Now, will it, since one TiVo has the Mocha built in, do I only need one other unit at the receiving end?
You need a, yes, that's right. You need Mocha at both ends, obviously.
Right. One's built in. So
but if you have one built in, you don't.
Unit, all I got to do is hook that up. I don't have to worry about my router or anything.
I don't. Yeah, no, it's its own network, basically.
Got it.
And by the way, the Apple TV apparently has TiVo now, and you could do that as well. You get an Apple TV in there. I'm going to have to try that. You know what? Mike B. suggested that. He's our TiVo guru in the chat room. That's a good idea. Maybe I'll put an Apple. I have an Apple TV in there. I'll just put the TiVo in there.
And by the way, I had ordered the Apple 6 the first day it came out.
I got to run. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I see what Mike's saying. I'll have to do that. So you launch the TiVo app on your iPhone or your iPad, and then you stream to your Apple TV using AirPlay, and now you've got what's on the TiVo in my office in the gym. Good. Say again. Now, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt, Rick. What was the second?
Not a problem. I was just saying that, I had ordered my new iPhone 6 the night that you could order it.
Me too, yes.
And of course, the 2 days before they shipped, I got an invite for the OnePlus One. So I bought the OnePlus One. I got my iPhone 6. I bought the regular 6, 128 gig. And once I got my OnePlus One, I haven't touched my Apple.
You're starting to sound like me. You got an array of phones now. Yeah, the OnePlus One is awesome.
Yes, I love the phone.
I agree. And, the OnePlus 2 is coming soon, and I'm very interested in what they do with that.
Yes, so am I.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, I think there's a solution there. I am not the expert on setting all this up. And if you want to know more, Mike B. is in our chat room at irc.twit.tv. And he's great. He's done every crazy thing there is with the TiVo. So you could ask him for further details.
Why, great. Well, and it's weird because I'm watching you on Chromecast.
Nice.
And every time you're talking and...
And a little echo, right?
A minute delay.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So it's kind of
well, fun. If you listen carefully, in about a minute, I'm going to answer your question.
Very good. Thanks so much,
thanks.
Leo.
See you later. So I should try that with Lisa because she's so frustrated. We're trying to watch You Think You Can Dance or something. And it's stuttering because the X1, which is in the living room, recorded it. And then we have the little boxes that are supposedly going to work. And I reboot the X1 in the living room, and it's still stuttering. So I could have her start it on her iPhone with a TiVo app. But that's what I'm going to do. Start it on the TiVo app on the iPhone, and then AirPlay it to the Apple TV in the gym, and she can watch anything that's on the TiVo. That's clever. Yeah, Loquacious One, the idea of recording shows is kind of silly nowadays. The only reason I still do it is because a lot of the on-demand, they do, rewind and fast forward have been disabled for this show. And then they show the same ad over and over and over again. So I think sometimes recording it is a better thing to do. TiVo, AirPlay, Apple TV. Well, there's some good TV. We just finished Penny Dreadful. That was scary. And we like Ray Donovan. Those are both on Showtime. HBO, True Detective, I think, is going down the same rabbit hole that it went down last season. So we're a little perturbed by that. And there's some good Amazon originals and stuff. Wig says the easiest way to watch So You Think You Can Dance is to download it from a newsgroup. That would be wrong. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Pat is in Carson, California. Our next caller. Hi, Pat. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. I got a question for you. We have four different Macs. Two of them were in one shop, one's at another, and then one's at the house, and we're all Mac-based.
Wow.
And basically, I was thinking about hooking up iCloud does it work similar to like Dropbox? Do we drop stuff in there, or does it automatically update everything to everything?
Yeah, it does kind of work like Dropbox. It doesn't. You don't say, I'm going to have an iCloud folder, as you do with Dropbox, and then that folder's automatically synced. iCloud is not quite like that. It's designed, first of all, like Dropbox, you'll have to all have the same account on those four Macs. You'll have one iCloud account.
Okay.
So that means you have to have one shared Apple account to do that. Also, iCloud only gives you 5 gigabytes to start. If you have four Macs, you'll fill that up pretty quickly, so you'll be buying more storage. Unfortunately, Apple charges more for storage than anybody else. So you might look at some other solutions. What is it you want to do? Maybe I should start with that.
Basically, we're working on our website, and I want us to all have access at the same time to all the different photos that we're updating, things of that nature.
So you want shared storage?
Yeah, plus also shared email.
Well, you could do that with iCloud, but you'd have all the same address.
Yeah, that would be okay.
Yeah, no, iCloud, you could do that. You could do that with, you could also create a Gmail account and all access that. I mean, that's not a hard thing to do. The issue is, do you want two people to be working on the website at the same time?
At times, yeah.
That is a very challenging problem, and I'll give you an example of why. So hubby's in the den, and he's working on the homepage, and he's just changed some text. Meanwhile, you're in the bedroom, and you've decided to swap that first paragraph out. The problem is, which is the right version? You have different versions on your machine and his machine, and the cloud version doesn't know which to save.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So the way this is handled, for instance, if you use cloud accounting, the way it's typically handled is you'll lock, as soon as you start working on some part of it, you'll lock it, and only one person can work on it at a time. As soon as he saves, it's unlocked, and you can grab it and make your changes. But it's challenging to do that. That is a hard thing to do, and most of the time when people are actually doing what you want to do, they use much more sophisticated solutions like GitHub that allow you to do team operations on a single document.
Well, we're also using Shopify for our website provider.
Got it. Okay. So you're working on the Shopify site?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Shopify will kind of handle that. I mean, if you're both logged in at once and try to change the site, I don't know how Shopify figures out who wins, but it must do that in some way.
Yeah, I normally let her know if I'm in a certain page.
Yeah.
So that way she's
stay out of that
page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that you don't even need iCloud for, because Shopify is acting as your cloud storage.
Okay.
But you want to have a folder of shared photos that you can both look at, something like that?
Yeah. And that we have right now with Dropbox. But what I was wondering with like the email, like, say I go into the email, can I, like, delete the emails and have them deleted on all the other Macs?
You can do that with any good email service. Are you using Apple's iCloud.com right now as your email?
No, that I'm not.
Okay, so you would have to do that. I would recommend using Gmail instead.
Okay.
And you both log into the same Gmail account. Or you could get, I mean, there's lots of ways to do that. What you want is something called an IMAP, I-M-A-P server. That's a mail server that the official version of the mail is stored up there in the cloud, and you can both look at it. And when you delete something or move something to a folder, it moves it for both of you because it's being moved on the cloud. And you both are kind of looking in through a window at the mail. That's kind of what happens with Shopify, too, as you work. You're looking through a window at your website. And you have to kind of agree not to change things at the same time.
I thought maybe in Mac Mail we could change the setting to where that would work that way.
Yeah. Are you using Mac.com now?
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd have to have the same account.
Okay.
But yeah, that'll work fine. Mac Mail is IMAP.
Okay.
Okay. So you want to do it on the web rather than use the Apple Mail application to download the mail.
Okay.
Actually, I think you could even do it that way because Apple's mail application supports IMAP and then would make the changes on the server. So even then you could do it. So the, yeah, so I think everything you want to do is doable. This is a very common thing, but you see where the complication can be if you both try to change something at the same time.
Oh, right.
Yeah. iCloud, probably not the best for what you just described. Apple intends iCloud more for backup, for synchronization of stuff like calendars and contacts between machines. If you use Apple's Pages or Numbers, you can save documents to iCloud as well as to locally. It's more for that.
And we have Carbonite now.
That's a backup. That's not going to do it either. That's just your backup, but that's good. Keep it up. I don't want you to stop doing that. But that's not document sharing.
Okay.
For document sharing, like Google has a great solution, Google Drive. We use that all the time here. So and they solve that problem of two changes at the same time. You can see who's using the document right now. You can even chat within a document and say, knock it off or whatever. But now it's not for your Shopify site, but for if you, say, wanted to work on a press release or look at photos. Google does that very well.
Okay.
So I'd look at that. Google's Photos is a good choice for this. And that way you kind of keep it away from your Apple stuff. And then each of you can have your own iCloud account. You don't have to share an account. Does that make sense?
Okay. Uh-huh.
You can even, and we do this at work, get Google for Work, which you do pay for. But then that's a great collaboration environment. And that's kind of how we do it. So I'm still in my Google account. Heather's in her Google account. But if she changes something on a shared document, we'll both see it. That's a great way to work.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
I got too complicated, didn't I?
No.
No? You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Brian in Santa Ana, Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Leo. Glad to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you.
Well, I had a Nexus 9 I bought back in November, and it was working great for me. Unfortunately, it started popping pixels left and right. And Amazon, in their infinite generosity, gave me a full refund.
Nice.
So I'm in the market for another tablet.
Oh.
And I'm looking around, and I'm not seeing much in high-end tablets out there anymore.
Yeah. Well, everybody's looking at Apple's declining sales and saying, maybe tablets are over. I think the best tablets, you want Android again?
Preferably, yes.
I think Samsung makes the best tablets right now. And they have a couple of models. They have one that are, you know, pressure sensitive. They have a Wacom digitizer on them. Those are the Note line. But they're out there of them, all out there. I think Samsung is very close to perfect. There's the NVIDIA Shield if you're gaming. That's excellent. Also has a very high-end processor. Yeah, I don't know what's happening to the tablet market. And I think nobody else does. And they're all watching and waiting. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Sony, the Xperia Z4, very nice. Yeah, I should have mentioned the Sony. I don't have it, but I saw a great review of that. Hey, our show today brought to you by Blue Apron. Are you a cook? Would you like to be a cook? You know, for me, I like to eat at home. I don't want to eat out. I know it's, you know, fattening and unhealthy, but we get home after a long day at work and I don't want to shop. Thank goodness we got Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers all the ingredients you need exactly in the right proportion, fresh and delicious, to your door, including a recipe card. And you know, you get home and half an hour later, you're having an amazing meal. And it's less than $10 a meal, so it's much more affordable than eating out. And it has the advantage of once you've cooked it, it's like, oh, I could cook this. You get some confidence. I mean, I know sirloin steaks with mashed purple potatoes and summer vegetables. Mm-hmm. Or summer squash and squash blossom quesadillas. Now, see, that sounds intimidating. It's not. Blue Apron makes it easy. Each meal is balanced, 500 to 700 calories per serving. Menus are always new. You'll never get the same meal twice. Go to blueapron.com. Look, you can do it right now, blueapron.com/twit. Look at the meal plans, the recipes that change every week. They even will, I mean, you can get the recipes there if you want to do your own shopping. They have videos on technique and stuff. It really is kind of a cool idea. But if you want to try the delivery, we've got two meals free for you. Your first two meals free at blueapron.com/twit. my mouth. Every time I say Blue Apron, my mouth starts watering. I think about the great meals we have had from Blue Apron. It is so much fun. They will work with your dietary preferences. If you're a vegetarian, they can handle that. And they have so many good meals. No trips to the grocery store. And there's never any waste for unused ingredients. They send you just what you need. Fresh from local farms. I can't say enough. It is great. BlueApron.com/twit. Enjoy it today. You know, hi, Brian. I'm sorry that we only had a few minutes. So thank you for getting back in the chat room. Android is a really big problem, which is that, and I understand why you bought a Nexus. And I guess you could get a Nexus 9. But Android, the only tablets that get updated on it guaranteed are the Nexus tablets from Google. I've been using this Nexus 7 forever, and it's great. And it gets up, it's at 5.1.1, it gets updated. But Samsung, it's the same thing with the Samsung phones, right? You have to wait till Samsung approves it, tests it, because they modify Android. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, anything with a chip in it. Even a Mongoose 5. That's the processor in the New Horizons satellite that just flew by Pluto. Well, they had to put it in 10 years ago. It's the best they had in 2005. The Mongoose V. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. And you can also reach us via Skype if you should so choose. Jonathan is next. He's on the line. And I don't know how to say this. I usually am pretty good, but is it Massillon, Ohio? Massillon?
Close to no cigar. It's Massillon. Hey, Leo, Massillon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing good. Hey, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Not quite old enough to have my Captain Crunch whistle, but I do remember my Hayes-compatible 1200 baud modem.
The Captain Crunch whistle is, of course, famous in hacking annals because a guy named John Draper figured out you could use it to issue a 2600 hertz tone and reprogram the long-distance phone equipment. He, of course, got the moniker Captain Crunch out of that. And Captain's still around with us. He's not in great shape. He's got a bad back, but he's a sweet guy, and I always liked John. So you don't have your 2600 whistle, huh?
No, too young. But I was once kicked off of a bulletin board in Simi Valley because I was the only member logging on at 1200 baud instead of 2400.
Like you're too slow for us. That's not nice. That's rude. Isn't it nice, though, that we don't have to do that anymore? I ran a two-line bulletin board, and that was luxury back in the day in the mid-'80s. Two-line bulletin board, and they both had those 56K Hayes U.S. No, they weren't Hayes. They were U.S. Robotics. They were the best you could get. 56,000 bits per second. Terrible. What can I do for you?
Quick question. Time to hand down an old Android tablet, old obsolete Android tablet.
Yeah.
What would you say is the Android equivalent of Dams, Boot, and Nuke?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
Derek's Boot and Nuke is a really great program we recommend all the time, DBAN for PCs. It's a Windows program that will wipe a disk, then write ones over it, then wipe it again, then write zeros over it, and do that a number of times to prohibit somebody from reading your disk. There's a couple of issues here. First of all, the solid-state storage that's used on most computers now and all smartphones leaks information. You can't really erase them. So there isn't going to be a DBAN for smart drives that really gives you the assurance that you've got everything. Just it's because of the wear leveling software that SSDs use, or in flash memory as well in most tablets. So the notion that you could completely erase everything on that system is you got to throw that away right now. So mm-hmm. Here's what I do. It's too late, by the way, for you. When you get a new phone or tablet, immediately turn on hard drive encryption. All Android devices have this capability. Apple does it automatically, by the way. You don't have to worry if you have an iPad or iPhone. It is already encrypted. Then all you have to do is reset it. And because it's been encrypted, there's just gobbledygook on the whole drive. No need to fully erase it because there's nothing they can do with it. It's random. It appears to be random data. And unless they log in as you, which they can't because you've wiped it, nobody can use it. So my advice going forward for everybody is turn on, if you're using Android, turn on disk encryption. If you're on an iPhone or iPad, you don't have to worry about it. Apple does that. In fact, when you log in or, you know, turn on your iPhone, it unencrypts stuff. And that's why they really want you to use a little, you know, code, a password to unlock it. The Android phone will say, if you want to use encryption, you'll now, from now on, have to use a PIN to unlock your Android device. It's worth it. Do it. If you buy a Nexus 6, by the way, and Google got some heat for this, but I think they did the right thing, they're already encrypted, just like the iPhones. Now, what can you do with your existing device? Nothing. You should wipe it. You know, do that. It's in the system settings. Erase it. Make it like it came from the factory. But there's no guarantee that some data won't leak through because you cannot write to every cell. You can't say, erase this cell. It's the way SSD works, unfortunately.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Isn't that weird? I'm glad you asked, though. I don't think it's commonly known. And most people, you know, what is on your phone, really? I mean, it's, well, I guess my bank accounts, passwords, social security numbers, all the people I know, phone numbers for very famous people like Steve Wozniak, stuff like that. Who cares? I always turn on encryption before I start. Okay. Now, most of the time, not much is going to leak through. The reason is you can't, on a hard drive, you can say, overwrite sector 1, now overwrite sector 2, now overwrite sector 3, now erase sector 1, sector 2, sector 3. You can directly address the drive. You cannot do that on SSD because they have software in there to keep you from wearing it out. So it handles where stuff gets stored. There's no way to give it a command that says go sector by sector and erase everything. You just can't. However, I would guess if you ran the reset command in the settings, wiped all the data, the best way to do this, and all Android devices will support this, you can Google it for your particular Android device, is to get into the recovery mode. Usually it involves turning it all the way off, then turning it on while pressing, I think it's, is it volume up? And the home button at the same time. You'll have to look for your device. And that puts it into a mode you've never seen before where you can wipe the data cache, you can wipe the software, you can get a little deeper and kind of have erased everything that's important. Stuff could still leak through if somebody's sophisticated enough to be able to get the SSD out of it and use hardware to address it and so forth. William is in Florin, Louisiana. Hey, William.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Right now, I'm currently, my satellite is about to expire for my internet.
Which satellite do you have?
I'm using Usenet right now.
Yeah, the old DirecTV.
And, yes, sir.
And how does that work for you? How is the speed okay? Is it?
At first it was. And then it, of course, you know, when the weather gets bad, it slows down tremendously. And then sometimes, you know, when the weather really bad, you go without completely.
Yeah. But they also have limitations on how much data you can use a month, right?
Yes, and the way this one works is they give you, you buy a package. And I think I was at the max package they had, which was 20 gigs.
A month.
And then a month. And then they give you an extra 20 gigs on an off-peak time, which was from 2 o'clock in the morning to 8 o'clock in the morning. So it was only 6 hours.
2 a.m. to 8 a.m. So you got to do all your Netflix watching in the middle of the night.
Yes, sir. But for the price that I was paying, I swapped over to a MiFi from AT&T back when they were
That's
the promotion plan they had.
Yeah.
Double your data.
Yeah.
So right now, I get 60 gigs.
Nice.
Well, because I'm using the MiFi for my main internet purposes, my Apple router that I was using that had the 3 gig, the 3 terabyte. I want to back up to that.
Okay, hold on a second. We're gonna have to take a break for commercial, okay. But I'm gonna come right back to you. And that's good. We've set this up. So we had a caller earlier in the show. Remember, and she's in a rural area. When you're in a rural area, you got to get data wherever you can. So I think that those two wireless solutions are probably the best for anybody. I'm glad to get that report. Thank you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. No, I don't think so. I think the aware leveling is built into the SSD. It's in the SSD's controller. And anyway, he was talking about a tablet. How are you going to get the hard drive out of a tablet? You can't. So if you think you're going to have something on your phone that you don't want anybody to see and you really care a lot about it, just turn on encryption. Google got a lot of heat on the Nexus 6 because it slows it down a lot. There's not built-in hardware support for data encryption. So the speeds of the drive were much reduced. It doesn't bother me. It's fast enough. But that's why they chose to do that. And that's why Apple does that. No, defragging is meaningless on an SSD. It doesn't have any meaning. Because the SSD has zero access time, right? I don't want to get in this conversation. It's complicated. I don't defrag. I stopped defragging years ago. But the old idea was, as you erased and put new software, that data would be spread out all over your drive. And so defragging it or optimizing it put all the data sequentially in the same place, theoretically speeding up the drive. And in fact, it could. The SSD doesn't have that problem. In fact, it wants to put data all over the place. It does that on purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
OS X started doing that, or the system before that.
Yeah, nobody, defragging is no longer useless. Well, if you think about it, there's latency as you have to wait for it to come around. So let's say you have data on contiguous sectors. Exactly. You read a sector. By the time you want to read the second sector, the head's already gone here, so you have to wait for it to come all the way around. So the real optimization would be to put these kind of at the... that's called interleave, right?
There's platters, too.
And then there's platters.
So you want to put them in the platters.
How many times have we... You do not want to turn off wear leveling on your SSD. You'll use it. It'll burn out. Because the idea of wear leveling is we want all the cells to be written to equally. We don't want cell one to get written to a lot because it'll use it. It has a limited number of write cycles. SSD does not need defragging at all. Zero. It is in the nature of an SSD because there's zero access time. It's random access, just like RAM. So it doesn't matter where the data lives. It's not a spinning drive. You can't turn off wear leveling. You can't turn it off. It's not possible. I've never seen a drive that you could say, don't do wear leveling. Just use encryption. It's the best thing to do. Exactly. Zero access time means no need for optimization. You'd kill it soon, not over time. You'd kill it quick. Defragging was always, on any modern operating system, anything post XP, or actually anything post Windows 98, you don't really. Modern operating systems take care of this automatically. Lazing on a Sunday afternoon with Leo Laporte, the tech guy. My idea of a good time. I hope it's yours, too. Thank you for being here. We were talking to William. He's in Florin, Louisiana. Now, he has so you're going to be using your MiFi, your cellular data, instead of your satellite for your internet access.
Right.
And you have an Apple router with a Time Machine built in. It has a hard drive built into it.
Right.
Right. And what did you want to know about that?
Well, what I'm doing is, okay, when I'm connected to my MiFi, it's a different network, so my Time Machine won't be backing up. And I was trying to find out, is there a way to connect the MiFi to the router and use it as...
Well, no, your Time Machine is a local backup. Are you also backing it up to the cloud?
I'm also backing up to the cloud.
Okay.
But,
so the local backup doesn't care. The local backup is happening over the local area network. And right. It's going to be the same speed as your LAN, and it's going to be fine. I mean, that's the niche, nature of network-attached storage, which this is, Time Machine essentially is. So you're saying I'm also backing it up to the cloud. What are you using, iCloud or something like that?
iCloud.
Yeah. So, and your Time Machine router is on the old HughesNet.
Right. Well, that my contract ends in like another month, so I'm going to cancel that service.
Okay.
But to keep from having to swap from the MiFi back to the router for Time Machine to work, I was trying to find out, is it possible to run the MiFi through the router? Because it also gives a better signal than the MiFi is. Because I can go, like, outside, you know, to my shop or whatever, and I can get the signal from my Apple router, but I'll lose the signal from the MiFi. So it gives a better signal throughout the house. So I was trying to find out if it was possible.
You could. I guess you could have. The problem is that router came from Hughes, right? That's their DirecTV box. Or no? Are you using a standalone third-party router?
Yeah, well, I'm using the wireless router is the Apple.
Yeah. And so you want to use the Wi-Fi to the Apple router?
Yes. I was wanting to know if it was possible to run the Wi-Fi through the Apple wireless router.
In theory, it is. I don't know if Apple would do that. This is called WDS. It's extending a Wi-Fi access point using another Wi-Fi router. And what you do is you tell that router, go into bridge mode. And in other words, don't be a router. Just get your data, your internet data from the MiFi and pass it along. Act as a repeater. In theory, that's possible. But Mike, not sure, though, that Apple gives you that as an option. You know, when you do WDS on an Apple airport, it says, you use an Airport Extreme, it says, would you like to extend your network? It's being, you know, it's being nice. It's not explaining what's going on. But I don't know I don't think an Apple airport can do just the WDS you want to do. So how are we going to solve this problem? That's an interesting question.
Yeah,
you want the Time Machine hard drive in the Apple router to be backed up to the cloud.
Because I have certain files too. I also want to back. You know, I got 400 plus movies, all HD on my Mac that I'm not wanting to back up to the cloud.
Do not back those up to the cloud. You'll never get done. Plus, you'll use up your bandwidth real quick.
You know, that's why I'm using the Time Machine with a 3 terabyte hard drive.
Yeah. Don't back that up to the cloud. But you have some data on there you want to back up, documents, stuff like that.
I have it set just for, you know, pretty much the emails, the documents. Of course, you know, with iTunes.
Is your is the computer that's connected to the Time Machine, is that on the MiFi or is that on the Hughes?
It's on the Hughes right now.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if it was possible to connect it to the MiFi, which the little MiFi device that's made by Netgate.
You know, there are MiFi-style routers like Cradlepoint makes these that act like normal routers, except they're using this LTE or the 4G network. Those would be able to do it because they have Ethernet connections and stuff. But I think what you're trying to do is not going to be real doable. Just be careful until you move to MiFi entirely. And then, of course, you can have Time Machine, the airport router backup, or you could have your computer itself. It's going to be on the MiFi network. You could use Carbonite or just iCloud to back up that way on your computer. So you back up to the Time Machine. That's your local backup over Ethernet. And then from the computer itself, not from the Time Machine, but from the computer itself, you back up to the cloud.
Yeah, because when Apple come out with a new Photos app,
right,
that ate up a lot of my data. Cause
right.
I had a lot of pictures on the Mac that wasn't on my iPhone or my iPad.
Yeah.
Vice versa. So when
within
2 days, I had 25 gigs gone.
What you're going to find, unfortunately, with all of these services, these cloud-based services from Google and Apple, is the assumption that you have unlimited, plenty of bandwidth, unlimited. Same thing with music services. It doesn't take long, using iTunes Match or Amazon's cloud backup or Google's All Access Music to use up hundreds of gigabytes, and you're not even aware of it. So I'd be very careful about how you use these cloud services, given your limited bandwidth. Living in a rural area is wonderful. Life is great. It's quiet. It's beautiful. It's peaceful. The air is great. But there is a disadvantage. Unlike electricity and water, the internet isn't yet evenly distributed over this country. It is a plan. It's something the FCC says we want to do, but they haven't done it yet. And that means that one of the sacrifices you make if you live in a beautiful rural area is your internet's not going to be great. And right now, there aren't many very good solutions. There's basically those two, the ones William's using, your cell provider, and both of these are costly, or a satellite solution. And both of them are very costly. Wireless internet is slower and more expensive than wired internet. And that's, by the way, if I'm going to move, I'm going to move somewhere with high-speed internet. I cannot live. That is more important to me than a beautiful view and clean air. I need high-speed internet. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Jim in Glendale, California, you're next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Leo. This is your low-tech call for the day, buddy.
You mean you're not going to ask me if it's possible to get Mocha on my Romeo?
No, and I don't care. And I have nothing about what's going by Jupiter near my house.
Well, good. I'm ready for that. My brain's overheating.
Well, I've been listening, and I can understand it. I tried to write Mocha down. I couldn't figure out how to do it.
I try to speak English, but it's not easy in this business.
I know.
It is a jargon-riddled business.
No kidding. So here's the question. Because I'm kind of an older guy, and me and my wife have been married a long time, we have a paper phone book that sits next to our phone.
Really? Where do you get one of them?
We just use cordless phones here in the house and dial the numbers, and we look in this old address book that's tattered and torn.
Wow. Hey, I got to take a break because it's the bottom of the hour. Hang on, because I will help you.
Well, I'm hoping.
I will help you, my friend. Hang on. Leo LaPorte, a paper phone directory. Whatever. Is that from the 18th century? Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Never crashes. The only drawback is there's only one. Backup is hard on a paper phone directory. I don't think he means like the yellow pages or the white pages, like a phone book, but he's got, and you know, it's funny. Jennifer, my ex-wife, all of her numbers were in there. And of course, as she would write them in kind of some random alphabetic order, like sometimes it was first name, sometimes last name, sometimes it was company name, sometimes it was just whatever the person did, like Joe the plumber was under P, and it was just it worked for her, but and I always said, oh, one of these days I'm just going to enter this all in for you, and we never got around to it because it would have been a lot of work. Then I guess if you had it, you could then print it if you really wanted a paper phone book. But at some point, you got to get it in the computer. We still get paper phone. I think the paper phone book still comes here. The yellow pages and the white page. I think we still get that, don't we? A shopping list. That's another one. I searched for a long time to find a paper shopping list like the one I grew up with. And we never use it. We use Google Keep. But it was a cash, like a adding machine roll of paper, and you'd pull it down and you'd tear it off. So as you need stuff, you'd add to it because it was hanging on the wall in the kitchen. And then when you'd pull it down and you'd rip it off and you'd take it to the store. But now Google Keep is great because I share that with Lisa. Unfortunately, there is no Google Keep app on iOS. There really ought to be. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We've been talking to Jim in Glendale, California. And he has an interesting issue. He's got a paper phone book. And you and your wife share it. It's sitting next to the phone. When you want to make a phone call, you look it up. Does it have, like, alphabetic tabs and all of that?
Yeah, but believe me, the gardener's name is under gardener.
Yeah, that's like ours was.
And the plumber's name is under Joe.
Yeah, you don't know.
Well,
you can't.
No, but the problem, the question before the house is, your house, is there a software program that you know of or someone in the chat room that I can go by where I can, where you put a disk in the computer and I can do, I'm savvy enough to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get the Pluto, but I can put the disk in the computer.
Yeah.
Up pops a screen and I start filling out names and phone numbers.
Every computer comes with that program.
No,
you don't.
But now I want to print it out and put it in the paper address.
Yes. Every computer does that. Because you know what? This is not a unique problem to you.
Well, I bet there's a million people that listen to you that have a paper address book next to their phone.
Exactly.
Their dial phone, the portable phone that sits in the kitchen.
So do you have a computer now or no?
I do. I'm looking at it now.
And what is it running, Windows or Mac?
Windows 7.
Okay. And
whatever the good one is that's going to transfer to, I think it's 7 that's going to go to 10.
Yeah. Just going to skip 8 and 9 and go right to 10.
Well, yeah, I think I've already got the notice that it might do that. But anyway, I'm...
So Windows has an address book built in, and you can open it, and you can enter in all that stuff. You only have to do it once. It's a little painful.
Well, of course it's going to be painful, because first I got to figure out what the plumber's name is.
Well, here's the beauty part. You know, you can leave the name blank and put plumber. And on a digital device, you just search for plumber and it'll come up.
Right.
And as you find out things, you can add to it. And then you can print it out any number of times you want. I think this is a great solution. Now, I'm not going to recommend you use Windows Address Book because I'm going to future-proof you.
Oh, boy.
It sounds painful, doesn't it?
No, not at all. I'm
The real issue, and you haven't come up across it yet, but you will come up across it eventually, is you want not only a paper version of this address book, but you'd like this address book on other devices, your tablets, your phones, new computers you get. So you want to keep this address book in a format that is easily moved around. In fact, ideally could be updated by multiple users. Your wife could update a copy and you could update a copy and you could both have it together. And so this is what I use. It's good. It's free. If you go to, if you open your browser and you go to contacts.google.com, that's the Google address book.
Well,
it's free. It's blank. It's exactly what you say. When you say add a contact, it's going to pop up a empty form.
I use Google.
Good.
To an address book in my computer.
Oh, you're set.
And it transfers automatically to my iPhone.
Right.
And the iPhone transfers to the Google on my computer.
Yeah, isn't that great? That's why, that's the future proofing. Because if you put it in Windows address book, it wouldn't do that. It would just be...
Can you print that?
Yeah, of course you can. So there's a couple of things you can do.
Oh.
You could, if you really wanted to, get Avery address cards. Do you have a printer? Right. Do you have a printer?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
It works, too.
It works. And you can export from Google all the contacts into a data format that the Avery program could read. And then it would print what looks like a real phone book with letters for each, you know, little tabs and the whole thing. You could also just print it out on pieces of paper, staple them, and put it next to the phone. It really depends on how fancy you want to get. But once you have all this data, and you already have some, in Google Contacts, there's lots of ways. This is why I wanted you to use Google Contacts, to manipulate it, to export it, to save it, so that you can use it in other things. So I think, you know, you if you go to your Google Contacts...
I'm looking at it now.
Okay, and you see where it says More on the left on the menu?
Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah, click the More. Click the More. And you go down, and there's, first of all, there's an export command and there's a print command. So you can print. Oh, look, this preview. Oh, I have a preview version of the new Google Contacts.
No, that's what you would
yeah.
to me.
Yeah.
I don't have that.
No, yeah, don't worry about that. But you can also export. And if you choose export, you'll export it into separated values, CSV. And then you could get address book software that will print it up in any fancy format you want. Avery makes, you know, pages that would even fit in a binder, and there's all sorts of ways to do it.
Now, is Avery address cards, is that a program?
Avery, you've seen them before. They make these labels.
They make labels and everything.
Yeah.
They have a software program?
Yep. They have a free software program. You can use it on the web or you can download it. You get the address, you know, whatever the printer. You have a inkjet printer, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'll get. Of course, they make labels, but you don't want labels. You want an address, you know, like an address book.
Right.
And I'm just assuming, but let me look real quickly. Yeah, they have Avery address book, and they will, and you can print it out, and all sorts of ways to do this. So if your wife says, "But honey, I want a paper address book with alphabetic tabs," you can do it.
Well, that's what we want. I mean, she didn't have to say it. I know that. She didn't have to be in the room for that to happen.
Yeah, you're not alone, and I think this was something I always wanted to do, but never got around to.
Well, you know, it's going to be time consuming because there's a million and one little things jotted in that book.
Yeah, that's the thing. You do that once.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'll be really honest with you. I wouldn't print it out because you're then going to start penciling stuff in on that printout, and you're going to have to do it again.
Yeah,
you really want to go all digital.
But how do you do that with something next to a phone in the house?
Well, you got your iPhone. What does your wife have?
Abacus.
Get her an iPhone.
Yeah. Well, she's asking for that.
Yeah, of course she's asking for it. Get her an iPhone. And you know what's great? All the addresses will be on there automatically. And then you say, honey, if you got to make a change, don't do it in pencil. Do it on the iPhone. It takes a little while. You know what? By the time you get used to this, you'll wonder why you ever wanted a paper address book again.
Well, you've certainly answered the question.
Yeah. And you could, but, you know, if you want to print out, you can do, that's the beauty of this. Once it's digital, and you can do it, you can copy it, you can print it, you can do anything you want with it. You can write it on, you can laser write it on, etch it on glass if you wish.
Wow.
I don't know why you'd want to.
I don't either.
But the reason I worry about you printing it out on paper is because you're just going to go back to that old habit of penciling stuff in on the paper book.
Yeah, but you know what? And then once a year you could go in and update that thing. And I know
you don't want to do that.
You may be right.
Yeah, you want to make a clean break. If you can't, if you're a Luddite and you say I don't want to do it, you can do paper. No problem. You can do anything you want. The key is getting it digital. That solves and the reason I like Google is it works with everything. Works with iPhone. Works with Android phone. Works with tablets. Works with computers. Works with everything. So you just have the central repository. Everybody can update it. There's even software that will automatically sync it with your Facebook contacts. So that if your Facebook friends change their phone number, your contact list automatically changes. That's something a paper book can't do. Joe the plumber moves. His new address is in there.
Wow.
Joe Jr. takes over. You just add Jr. It's easy. Yeah, I think it. While it's a little painful, this is what we're all. This is. During World War II, the greatest generation, their cross to bear was the Nazis. For us, it's the internet. Our generation, we're in the process, our whole society, everything we know is changing dramatically. Jobs are disappearing, jobs are being created, all because of computers, digitization, and the internet. And it's just the cross we have to bear. We're in that transitional generation. It's better than Nazis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think Windows address book is gone. I don't think it doesn't come with it anymore. But if you think about it, of course it doesn't, because it's a bad idea. go if you want to use contacts.live.com. Use Microsoft's version of it, but put it online. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, that's what I like about you. Joseph in Santa Clarita, California. You're next. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great. How you doing?
Great. Hey, Leo, I have a dilemma. I am trying to justify. I drive a Ford with my Ford Touch in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a really nice screen, of course, for traffic.
It's got several.
And navigation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But here's my question that I'm trying to justify is that Ford, in order to keep my system updated, I have to pay them $150 a year. Okay? Why would I want to pay $150 a year when I can get Waze or
I know.
Google Maps?
I know.
And their traffic updates are on the spot instant.
Here's the difference. Here's the problem.
Okay.
When you want to make a new car, you start designing. It's kind of like the New Horizons probe to Pluto. You start designing it, and then 9 years later, you get a new car. When you want, right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. When you want to make a new app, it takes about 9 months, maybe less. So there's a big impedance mismatch between how long it takes to design and build and create and sell a car and how long to design and build, create and sell software on a smartphone. Ford knows this. Ford actually opened a app developer branch in Silicon Valley to get app developers to write to my Ford Touch and Ford Sync. But the next generation really is even better. And Ford has signed up for this. Both Apple and Google are offering solutions that really make this better. Apple calls it CarPlay. Google, I think, calls it Android Car. And the idea is you get in the car. And Ford, I mean, I remember Ford telling me this years ago, we know the phones are getting updated much more rapidly than we could possibly update the cars. So what we're going to do is basically make the phone an extension of the car. And with the cooperation of Apple and Google, this is going to start happening. Now, this will only happen in the new model years.
Sure.
It takes a while. And I think the first cars are already out. Are they Hyundais? I can't remember. Kias? I can't remember who's doing it. One company, I think Korean company's doing it already. But when you plug in your phone, initially it was when you plugged in your phone via the USB port, the phone software would appear on the car screen. Where your Ford Sync comes up, you would see Siri, you would see Apple Maps. On Android, obviously, you'd see Google Now and Google Maps. Probably Waze as well. Google owns Waze. And those apps, Pandora would be your music player or Spotify. So those apps that are on your phone, and the data, by the way, coming into your phone would become the car's entertainment and communications system. And this is a very good solution.
That does make sense. But, I mean, I did call Ford, and I asked them when I got the renewal notice, and I said, why would I pay you
$139.99. Well, don't. I used to have a Sirius satellite radio. I'm not going to buy satellite radio. I got Spotify.
No,
I get better quality music coming in on my smartphone. All I have to do is get it into the sound system. And now with Bluetooth,
right. It's
easy.
Yeah, I get Pandora and Spotify, and the sound quality is amazing.
Ford has, by the way, cut ties with Microsoft. They're the ones that did that, my Ford Touch and Ford Sync. That was Microsoft Car. That's done. They've said, we're going to work with CarPlay with Apple. But Ford is being a little bit, I think, backwards looking. And I love them, by the way. Love my Mustang. But they're not going they're not going to do what I wish they would do and what some other manufacturers are doing, which is give Apple the display. So they're going to still have their interface, I think, on there. At least that's what they said a few months ago. You know, car companies are in such a different cycle than computer and software companies. So this is all rapidly changing. But I certainly, if you're going to buy a new car, the first thing you should say is, does it support CarPlay or Android Car? Because that's what you're going to want. And in the meantime, you hook up your phone to the USB charger, and that phone becomes your navigator, your music player, everything. That's the best way to do it.
I have to tell you, I worked for the studios, and I was on my way to Paramount a couple of weeks ago, and I was driving down Melrose Avenue, and Waze said, watch out, pothole ahead. And sure enough, two blocks ahead, there was this huge pothole that I was able to miss, and my Ford Touch would never have told me that.
Waze is amazing. Waze is all of the maps on Waze are crowdsourced. So, and if you log into Waze, if you're not using it, you should at least download it on your iPhone and your Google phone. And when you log into your Waze account, it'll tell you how many Wazers are in your area. And even here in Petaluma, we're kind of a rural area, there's always thousands in my area. And I'm sure in LA, there's tens of thousands. And people are saying, there's a pothole here. There's a speed trap there. There's a red light camera there. There's a wreck here. And that way, Waze can then auto-route you around it. And by the way, they do an excellent job. They'll do things like get you off the freeway for one exit to avoid the wreck.
And that's exactly what it did today. We were coming from Santa Clarita, driving out to Murrieta, and it completely diverted us. we have this motto at the studios that says, trust your inner way. You know?
Are you a driver for the studios, or you just work at them?
No. I do makeup and on-camera work for them.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah.
That's great.
But the thing is, you never, ever want to be late.
No, yeah.
Hold up a production.
Oh, no.
Curtain, you know?
Oh, no. Yeah. And so what you used to do probably is leave an hour early.
Well, yes. I still do, actually.
Yeah.
Because I just never want to risk that.
No.
But the one thing I will say in defense of the onboard navigation system of the cars is, like, last year in November, we went to my niece's wedding on the coast outside of Seattle, and we had to go through the mountains and everything, and I lost connection with Waze.
There's the advantage, isn't it?
Yes, my onboard system stayed connected.
Right. It's not
satellite.
It's storing its maps. Well, it's not even that. It's storing its maps. They're on a hard drive. Now, I do recommend, I always have Google Maps, Waze, and something called Here, H-E-R-E, from Nokia. And I highly recommend this. It's free. And you can, it has an offline mode. You can download maps. So a few gigabytes. Wow. I've downloaded all the maps for the U.S. And even if I don't have internet connectivity, your GPS continues to work unless you're underground. So you still know where you are. And now you have the maps pre-downloaded. That means it works just like your car's nav, even if you're offline, even if you're in the mountains. So everybody should have Here, H-E-R-E, as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay. Well, thank you.
Great to talk to you.
Really appreciate it. Okay. You have a great day.
You have a good job. Any job where your title is moi is great.
Yeah. Right.
You're a moi, a makeup artist. Hey, great to talk to you. Take care, Joseph. Okay. Bye-bye. Love these solutions. And, you know, the car companies understand this. I mean, Ford really was on the forefront of this. The idea that your phone really should be your internet connectivity, your music player, your maps, all of this stuff, because these phones are updated all the time. There are aftermarket head ends you can put into your car. Alpine and Pioneer both make CarPlay compatible head units. If your car, you know, that you can replace, take out the existing head unit and put that in. I'm not sure I would jump on that one. Because, well, I just don't know. I've heard some bad reviews of these units, and they're very pricey. We're talking $400 to $700. But I do think that if you're in the market for a car, and certainly in the future, if you're in the market for the car, that's one of the things to ask about. Do some research. Find out if that company plans to support CarPlay or Android Car, because it's great. Waze is amazing, isn't it? Everybody I know who this was a small Israeli company. It came out of nowhere. Google bought them for, I think, $1 billion, a lot of money. But what Google's never done, oddly enough, is integrate it into their Google Maps. They're still two standalone applications. I think some of the Waze information is getting into Google Maps, because Google Maps does have up-to-date traffic information. I suspect some of that, at least, they're getting from Waze. But I'll always have Google Maps on my iPhone, Apple Maps, Waze, and Here. And I always download all the maps. When we went to Europe, I wanted to know where we were. It was so fun in the riverboat as we're going down the river. Didn't need to use connectivity. I could see exactly when we crossed over in Austria. I knew. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hour 3 of today's Tech Guy Extravaganza. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you want to call in and be part of the fun, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You can use Skype and call if you're not in those areas. We talk on this show about anything with a chip in it, so that's a computer or the internet. And we also talk about digital photography. Just got back from a trip to Europe and they were asking in the chat room, 1,400 pictures. But I only brought one camera and one lens. I thought, you know, I don't want a big camera bag. I don't want to carry around hundreds of pounds of gear. I didn't even bring a tripod. I brought a GorillaPod. Those are cool. Have you seen those from Joby? They're like little articulated. It's hard to describe. It's a bendy tripod, I guess, would be the best description. And that was nice to have because I did a time lapse. I like to do time lapses. I did a time lapse of our riverboat going through a lock in a canal. You know, it's like a ship elevator. It raises you up or lowers you down to meet the next section of the river. And it takes a long time. It was a half hour, 45 minutes to go through this lock, but I sped it up, so it's just 3 minutes. And that was cool. And the way I did it is I had to attach my camera to a Joby bendy little tripod and wrap the legs around the rail on the ship. But it worked. One camera, one lens, brought to the Sony A7, which I really like, the A7S camera, because it's good in low light. It's good in broad daylight. I brought just one 50-millimeter normal lens. And I didn't, you know, my wife got great pictures because she had a wide-angle telephoto zoom. So she was able to get pictures I couldn't get. Because when you have one lens of a fixed length, you have to just walk to where you, you know, want to take the picture from. It's zooming by walking. And sometimes you just, you can't. You can't get a wide-angle shot of a building or a zoomed-in shot of a detail on a building. But she did a great job with that. Her pictures are wonderful. You can see those on her blog, lifeoflisa.com. And one of these days, I'll go through all 1,400 pictures and I'll post some. I guess I posted a few on Instagram as we went. My Instagram account is Mr_Laporte. MR_LAPORTE if you want to see a few pictures. And I'll put some more up. It's fun. I think one of the things I like about photography as a hobby is it makes travel, it gives you something to do that's great. You know, with travel, you take these pictures and it's so much fun. You're seeing something interesting and that's fun. So that's one of the things I'm glad to talk about. I'm absolutely a devoted photo hobbyist. We'll talk about smartphones and smartwatches. Gosh knows, I got a pretty good collection of those, too. I try to keep up with all of that stuff. Get the latest Apple Watch, the latest Android Wear watch, the latest iPhone and Android phone. So I can help you with that, too. 8888 Ask Leo. The website is where we put everything after the fact. So if you hear something, you don't have to write it down. It'll all be there. All you have to remember is techguylabs.com. No sign up, no fee. I don't want your email address. It's very simple. Oh, there's a Joby. Is that a Joby? That's not exactly a Joby, but it's like it. Pod. It's a what?
I think it's Gorillapod brand.
Gorillapod is the Joby brand. I don't know. Anyway, it's the same idea. It's a bendy leg. That helps because on radio, I think now people can really see it better. It's a bendy tripod with weird kind of legs. Back to the phones we go. Ann in Redmond, Oregon. You're next. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Leo.
How are you?
I'm great. Thank
Welcome.
You.
What can I do for you?
Well, I have a photo app for iOS and Android called Zoom, Zoom, Zoom.
I don't know that one. What does it do, do, do?
Do oh, it, what it does is the app presets incremental zoom settings for rapid sequence photography.
Oh, so like you could take a picture, then zoom a little bit, take a picture, then zoom a little bit, and then right. What you get is like this zooming in picture.
Right, and or out. You can set it for either way. You can zoom in or you can zoom out.
Oh, that's neat.
And you can also, there's a slider so you can set your zoom range, and there's an auto and a manual mode. So you can have it just start taking the pictures after you've preset your slider and your numbers, or you can set it and then take a picture, and then there's a little button in the middle there, and then set it and take another picture.
Neat.
That's, it is neat.
That sounds good. I'm going to have to get it. And it's on the iPhone.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. All right.
So my question is yes. that... We have our site hosted on Squarespace.
Okay, good.
We would like to be able to have our customers upload some of their pictures, you know, so that they can feel included and everybody likes to show off.
Nice. What's your business?
Well, that would be the Zoom, Zoom, Zoom.
Oh, you make Zoom, Zoom, Zoom.
Yeah, I'm the inventor.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought when you said we have an app, I thought you meant you just have it on your phone. You invented it.
I'm the inventor.
Well, that is super cool.
Yeah.
Did you write it yourself or did you come up with the idea and then hire a programmer to do it?
I came the idea, and then we had a programmer write it. First, we tried to write it in Swift. That kind of helped. And it was really hard, so we ended up writing it in C++.
And I think this is smart. You want to make a website where... And a lot of times when you have special photography stuff like this, people do that. They make a website where their customers can share their zooms.
Right.
Squarespace probably isn't right for that.
Okay.
Squarespace, which I love, and by the way, they're a sponsor, so a little disclaimer there, but I do love them. They're great for making a site kind of a straightforward, simple site. But what you want to do is a little bit more complicated. You really want to make... You want to make a community site. And in order for people to upload photos, they'd have to create accounts. You'd have to have significant amount of storage, assuming that lots of people get Zoom. Now right. You're talking almost as complicated a project as creating the app in the first place. Because really what you're doing is creating a web app, which is a community for your Zooms. You see what I'm saying?
We have thought about all this, and then we were worried about people just uploading all kinds of crazy pictures.
Well, that's the other thing, because now you got to moderate this like crazy. Just look at what's happened at Reddit, and you'll see why making a community site can be really a challenge.
Right.
Having a community of any kind is like gardening. You've got to get the weeds out immediately, because weeds will take over, and then once the weeds take over, nobody is going to come back. It's done. So it means not merely the challenge of creating this site, but the challenge of maintaining it, moderating it, getting more people. What if instead of doing a site, you did something maybe a little more modern? You asked people to tag their Zooms and upload them to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram using a hashtag, right? And then on your Squarespace site, you could say, see what people are doing with Zoom. Click this link, and you can click a link that goes to Twitter and everything hashtagged Zoom, or Facebook Zoom, or Instagram Zoom. Right?
Right. No, that sounds like the best.
Then you don't have to make a big elaborate site. You're not responsible for the content. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram are. And it's easier for your users because they already have that. You know, when I travel, I always post to Instagram. So if I use Zoom to make a picture, it wouldn't be such a big deal. If you could even make, I don't know if your app has this, but I bet most apps that are like this have a share button, right, that you can share your Zoom?
Oh, we don't have a share button. That's a great idea.
Get a share button and automatically add the Zoom tag to the share. See what I'm saying? Now you see where I'm going with this? That's how you build a community. And I think really the smart way to do this nowadays is to piggyback on people who've already solved this issue, like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Put a share button in your app, have it add the Zoom tag, and then on your website say, hey, look at all the Zooms. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I got to find this. Zoom. I found a... here it is. Is it Zoom Player? Basic Zooming? Should have asked her what the website is. She's still there? What's the website? Here. Oh, you're still there. Good. What's the website?
I'm here.
What's your Squarespace site?
The Squarespace site is www.darkhorseproductionsapp.com.
Is this your first app?
Yes.
How exciting.
It's really exciting, and I'm sorry I'm a little nervous.
Oh, you don't sound nervous. You sound great. All right, I'm going to darkhorseproductionsapp.com. Ah, see, this is good. Now, I should mention this on the air because here's where you can find Zoom, and you can see it. This is cool. So, and one of the reasons I asked you is that I think there are a lot of people who listen to the show who say, I have an idea for an app. How do I make it? And so you figure that out.
Yeah, well, you know, we went to the developer, and we actually, the first people we went to, it just wasn't working.
Yes.
They didn't get it, so we finally found just a guy off of Craigslist.
Sometimes that's the way it is, isn't it?
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just really was great.
And you're pointing it to Android, I heard your husband say.
Yes, in the background.
But
we did. It's in both stores.
Sotto voce, we're porting it to Android. Nice
5-star review from somebody. It's really exciting.
Now, okay, a couple of things you don't have and you need to have on your website, a link to the Android and iOS store page.
Okay.
You know how sometimes when you go to a site, there's a standard button that's on the site that says, get it on the App Store. You need those two buttons because otherwise, I see this, but I want to get the app. And how do I get the app? Well, there's nowhere for me to click. You gotta put that on their website too.
Okay, did you get that, honey? I'm looking at the pictures.
Write that down, honey. There's a honey-do for you. And I do like the idea of putting, and anytime you have a photo app, having share buttons in there is great. And both iOS and Android make that very easy. That's built, you know, your programmer could do that very quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. You'll have to update it and ask for new permissions because that's something new, but that's fine. That's normal. How much did you pay to get if I might ask, and you don't have to tell me, but how expensive was it to get the app done?
I don't mind telling you. The first people charged us $7,000.
Okay.
And finally I said I'd had enough. And then,
not unusual, by the way. It's hard to find good programmers.
But plus the Android.
It was $2,000 to update it for iOS.
$2,000. And then it was when we got Boris off of Craigslist, it was $2,000 to rewrite what they had written that was a mess.
Nice. That's a hell of a deal.
Oh, yeah. And then
can I tell you what the quote is for us to do our app?
For $2,500.
You want to know what the quote is for us to do a Twit app? $60,000 for one.
Oh.
And then if we want an iOS app, it'll be a little less, maybe $55,000.
Oh, my gosh.
So you got a deal.
Yeah, we thought so. And after all the craziness with the first people to work with somebody that really knew what they were doing.
Boris, I got to run, but good luck. And I'll give a little plug for you to the website.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Ann. Take care. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I talked a little more to Ann off the air about her app. Cool app. They're making an Android version. I like this idea. Zoom, zoom, zoom. And I cannot find it. And this is a real problem on all app stores, but Apple particularly ought to get this better. It's hard to search for an app by name. So she gave me the web address for her app, which is darkhorseproductionsapp.com. We'll put this in the show notes. But even then, there's no link on the website. So my advice, strong advice to her was, and this is true. I mean, you've got to make it easy for your customers to find you. So put a big button on the website that says download the app and links right into the iTunes store. You can do that easily. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Cool idea. 8888. And I love seeing somebody create. You know, this is starting to be a movement. The maker movement's part of this. But you look at our kids, and our kids are great at consuming, aren't they? I guess we all are. We're all consumers. We download software. We download applications. We play games. We watch content. But in my opinion, if you can teach your kids to not just consume but to also be creators, everybody, including your kids, will be happier. So I love seeing somebody go from being a consumer of apps to a creator of apps. And we got to get everybody to do that because I think that's when you're really living, I think, is when you're making something of your own and sharing it with the world. And this technology makes that possible for anybody to do. Create. 8888, Ask Leo, the website, techguylabs.com. That's where you'll find a link to the Zoom, Zoom, Zoom website. John is on the line from Biddeford, Maine. Hey, John, Leo Laporte.
Hey, I've got a quick irrelevant question for you. I'm a big fan of the show, but I can't find any podcast for the July 4th weekend. What went on the air that weekend?
I took the weekend off. It's the nation's birthday, for crying out loud.
Oh, okay.
I had to celebrate. No, we were in Europe that weekend, so there is not a podcast for the July 3rd or 4th episodes. You didn't miss a thing. We did a rerun.
Oh, Okay.
You've already heard it.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mostly listen on the podcast now, although I first hooked in.
Yeah, that's great. And we love it if you do. You can find those at twit.tv or techguylabs.com.
Okay, as far as my question, I'll try to get right to the point as far as what I'm seeking from you. I'd like you to analyze and tell me best you can what you think is going on, and maybe offer some advice as to how to approach the phone company to deal with this. My internet service now is DSL from a company called Fairpoint, and I get it from not the direct main office switching station, but a booster station.
Yes.
Supposedly, that doesn't really make a difference, and I'm within a mile, so my speed is supposed to be theoretically up to 15 megabits per second.
Yes.
What I actually measure using something called testmy.net, usually floats between 8 and 10 megabits per second, and that's fine. My problem, which I have never heard of anybody else experiencing with DSL, is that multiple times a day, the speed drops drastically down to dial-up speed or below. And just as I was, you know, waiting to talk with you, I was looking at the log that they created on this website, and at one point, my speed dropped to 675 kilobits per second.
That's terrible. I presume you've talked to Fairpoint and asked them what's going on.
Well, I think they're well aware of this, and they're just stonewalling it because they have their national customer service, and what they insist is that, A, I can only use their preferred tester, which is speedtest.net, which usually inflates, I think, what...
I'm going to give you a third. Let me give you a third one. It's at Broadband Reports. It's the best speed tester I've ever used, okay. Broadbandreports.com.
Okay.
It's interesting that they do not honor any other speed test. I don't know what that means, but...
I think it means that they want to, A, inflate the results, and B, the other thing is critical...
It's a little suspicious, I confess.
Right, and not only that, what I do is, you know, testmy.net will automatically test every 5 minutes, so you get kind of a graph that shows how it fluctuates, and that's how I find... You know, that I'm getting speeds. I think the lowest one I ever recorded was 5 kilobits per second. And I'm amazed that the page even loaded.
Okay, I'm going to give you a couple of things. First of all, you do me this honor. Try the Broadband Reports speed test. First of all, it's reliable. It will give you an accurate result. It will also give you some information that may be useful.
Okay.
Do you use Fairpoint's router or do you use your own router?
I've tried both, and right now I'm using Fairpoint's, which is one of those combo modem routers. And actually, that works better than what I had before, which was an old Linksys with.
Because there are routers are really just computers, but they're cheap computers, and there are issues sometimes with different routers. It's good that you've used both, and you've had the same issues with both.
Right, and what happened was after getting stonewalled by their national customer service center, I tried locally at one of their what they call their retention center, which is more regional and it includes folks that have worked for the company for a long time when it was owned by others. And they managed to send a tech out, and he came into my home, and he said that unlike the national customer service center, yes, they're aware of this problem, and what they said was happening was that Fairpoint servers couldn't handle the traffic, so that there were bottlenecks. So what he tried to do was to switch me from the servers for Fairpoint that I was apparently using to begin with to ones that apparently the company has started leasing from Google. And that greatly improved it in terms of, the outages still occur. And in the last week, they've increased somewhat, which led me to call you. But, it did seem to get the problem to the point where it wasn't quite so annoying. But it's still there. And
I'll tell you this. I mean, everybody has this happen from time to time. Internet speeds are not consistent. DSL tends to be more consistent because of how it works. But it can still be a case where they have more customers than they bought bandwidth, because every internet service provider has an upstream provider. Fairpoint is buying internet access from others, Level 3 or Cogent or others, or maybe several. And if they're not buying enough and everybody gets online at the same time, if, for instance, your bandwidth goes down in prime time, television prime time, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., that's because everybody in your area is watching Netflix and they didn't buy enough bandwidth. But it can also be bad routers. It could be bad software on your computer. It could be a slow computer. It's one of those things that's easy for the ISP to dodge by saying, well, it's not us, because it may not be them. So it's hard for me to say who it is. It sounds like you've done enough digging at this point that you've figured out that probably is FairPoint. And in fact, FairPoint's not buying enough bandwidth. All you can do is rattle their cage. If they promised you, and this is something commercial ISPs offer that home ISPs don't, a service level agreement. And this is, you pay a lot for an SLA, but that guarantees you certain performance. You might check to see, did they promise you certain performance? Because if they're not delivering, then you can go after them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Usually, ISPs are very careful to say things like speeds up to or as fast as. They're not telling you the minimum. They're telling you the maximum. And he's in Maine. FairPoint's a big New England provider. And that's the issue, is a consumer-grade service, they don't offer you a guarantee at all. There's no SLA. They're saying, well, you know, you could be as fast as 5 megabits or not. And part of that is because they can't guarantee it. They're not spending the money on infrastructure to guarantee performance. And that's why if you have a commercial service, we have commercial service, and you have SLAs, it's damn pricey. We spend $5,000 a month on internet access because we're a business and we need it. But no consumer is going to spend the kind of money that's necessary to get an SLA, I don't think. So, on the other hand, you know, you can complain and you should complain. It shouldn't be a few hundred kilobits per second. Speedtest.net is fine. I don't think that those are, that they have, I'd be curious to hear if they've got deals with ISPs to lie. I don't think so. So Speedtest should give you the same result as TestMy.net, which should give you the same result as DSL Reports should give you. But I like DSL Reports because it gives you more information. This is a... So it tells you if you've got buffer bloat. It tells you about your ping, and not just to local servers, but to distant servers. It even shows you, this graph is very useful because it tests servers all over. This is a ping time. So it shows you the best and worst. These are very good results. It shows you a graph over time, and it does a longer test than Speedtest does. So these are very trustworthy results. And if you see buffer bloat, that's an issue that some routers, especially cheap routers, have. Too much RAM, believe it or not. And if you do see buffer bloat issue, that's something to address as well. So Broadband Reports has done a bang-up job with this. And by the way, it's not Flash. It's HTML5. It's really awesome. And they even have, if you really want to do the test deep, results, you could see who's getting gigabit plus service, which is pretty amazing. A lot of Google ISP users. That's interesting. Washington Wisp says, I'm an ISP, and the hack that ISPs use, they allow packets to speedtest.net to bypass, of course. So they see you're going to speedtest.net, and they go, oh, let's give him some priority service. Okay, so if you do see a discrepancy between Speedtest services, that's a bad sign. They should be in the same ball yard. I will sign up for Xfinity 2 gig if they do it here. Are they doing it everywhere? I have a Xfinity Comcast Business right now at home, which has been satisfactory, although I've had issues. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Ah, interesting. So we were talking before the break with a fella in Maine who feels bad service from his internet service provider, and he was testing the speed with mytest.net, and he said, and the speed was all over, got very slow. When he called the internet service provider, they said, oh no, you have to use speedtest.net or we don't honor those numbers. And the implication in my mind, in his mind, was, well, and somehow they're if they're saying, no, you can only use speed test to test our speed, there's something wrong there. Really, the speed should be consistent across a variety of speed tests. And as I mentioned, I like DSL Reports version, dslreports.com. But what I would do is use them all, use everything you could find. And they should all be very, if you're doing it at the same time, they should all be very close. If one reports an unusually fast speed, that's a bad sign. And I found out how this happens because one of our chatters is an internet service provider in, I think, Washington State. And he said, well, in fact, internet service providers can mess with speed test because what they do is they look and see and they say, oh, you're going to speed test, and they make sure they flip the switch and give you the best bandwidth possible. They turn off any limiters. They turn off anything that would slow your service down. And then they say, see? But as soon as you're surfing anywhere, any other site, it's back on and your service goes back down. So if an ISP tells you, oh, we only honor one speed test, that's very, very suspicious. That means they're basically messing with the test. They're artificially inflating their results. And that, you should call them on that, and I'd report them to the Better Business Bureau and do whatever you can. Your Public Utilities Commission, whatever you can, because that's nasty. That's wrong. Try different speed tests. The fact that you got a speed test that shows such poor performance and their response was, ooh, you know, you should use something else. Now, maybe what they're saying is, well, we don't like testmy.net. That, we don't find that to be accurate. So fine, use others. But if they say we only honor one, I'd be a little suspicious. And I would go out and get as many different speed tests as you can. There are many of them out there. And don't just trust one number. But if you get similar results on three numbers and then on three sets systems, and then one system gives you consistently higher numbers, and that's the one the internet service provider says we recommend, that's suspicious. That's nasty. Moving on to Art in South Kingston, Rhode Island. Hey, Art.
Hi, Larry. How are you? Great show.
I am great, and it's good to talk to somebody in my home state.
Home state, Rhode Island?
I grew up in Providence.
Really?
My mom lives in Cranston.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
What can I do for you? I'm going to give you special service. Just get that.
Terrific. I'm going to need
$5
it.
$5 off.
I live in East Greenwich, and I have a calling from my summer house. I have a summer cottage in South Kingston.
Okay, now I'm going to charge you $10 more because you have a summer house. Okay, go on.
Cottage, I guess.
Oh, it's a cottage. Oh, that's all right then.
So I'm looking for a surveillance system that doesn't have Wi-Fi. I don't have Wi-Fi at the summer cottage, but right. I do have it at home. So is there one that could go? I have an Apple 6 smartphone. Is there one that could possibly tie into that? Do they make one?
So you want security cameras that you can monitor from your phone when you're not at your cottage. And you say right. You do not have Wi-Fi?
I don't have Wi-Fi at the summer cottage.
So you need a hardwired, you need an Ethernet cable for every camera. If you're going to do that, that's how they get online.
Okay.
You can't, unless you're thinking maybe use 3G or something like that.
Well, I didn't know if that was a possibility. And I went to a couple of big box stores, the BJ's and the Sam's Club, and the guys weren't familiar with that. But somebody told me there's got to be a way
I
can do it.
Well, there would be, but you'd only want to have one camera because you're going to pay cell service on that one camera.
Okay.
Now, one thing you could do, here's a solution that might be adequate for you, is get Wi-Fi, but get it from a cell service company. They sell, we've talked about it earlier, little cards. Sometimes they're called MiFis. They're really wireless access points that those cameras could all use that are connected to LTE or 3G.
Okay.
So, in effect, you've got a camera that's using the cellular network. And, by the way, that's the better way to do it because you don't want to have each camera have its own SIM card and its own bill. That's a terrible idea. What you want to do is create Wi-Fi that all the cameras, if you have multiple cameras, can use, and you get one bill, one SIM card.
Okay, so
does that make sense? So I presume the reason you don't have Wi-Fi there is it cost or that you don't have a provider out there?
Well, it's mostly because we just use it for a few months.
You don't use it. Okay.
In fact, we just gone to satellite. We have DirecTV now.
Okay, so I would first figure out who's the best cell company in that area.
Okay.
Is it Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile, whoever, right?
Then, probably all of them, but at least Verizon for sure.
If you know Verizon, if you're getting five bars and it's good, go to the Verizon store and say, I want a wireless access point. And they will either sell it. Most of the time, they'll sell it to you under $100. And then you have to pay data rates, like $30 a month data rates. But now you've got Wi-Fi in the house.
Okay.
And then you can go out and get drop cams, which I really like. They're Wi-Fi-enabled cameras. They do a great job. They record online, so you can check it after the fact. It's nice to get a notification, hey, somebody's in your backyard. But the problem is, what if it happened in the middle of the night? What you'd like to do is go back and look. And so these Dropcam is one of the companies, owned by Google, that will record and store these online. You pay a small monthly fee, and you can go back in time. And you can say, what happened last night in the backyard?
I've heard you mention that Dropcam before, and I did go on their website. But like I said, that was my biggest issue.
Well, but they need Wi-Fi. But see, you can solve the Wi-Fi very easily. And by the way, that would be the best way to do it. You don't want to have to put an Ethernet cable to a camera. And if you have multiple cameras, now you really got a pain in the butt.
Right.
And you don't have internet service. So then you're going to have to get an internet service anyway. So these cameras, if you want to look at it on your iPhone, they have to have internet access. Best way to do this, get a little MiFi card from Verizon. And now, by the way, you also have some internet access when you're in the cottage.
Perfect. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Thank
you're welcome. Man. My pleasure. And I gave you a $5 discount. I hope to tell the cashier on the way out. Website techguylabs.com. Everything I mention, we'll put a link to the drop cams. We use them. I love the drop cams. Is on that site. We also use now internally. We're using a Synology security system, and that records locally instead of on the internet. It's less useful for things like a summer cottage. It's good for a business though, and we've been very happy with that. Synology, S-Y-N-O-L-O-G-Y. You attach cameras to it. It records on a server on the network, and you can go back and that's important, and look and see what happened. 8888 Ask Leo. More calls. Our last segment coming up. There's lots of them. Lots of cameras out there. You do live in the golden age. This is a golden age. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What we do every weekend on this show is talk about how things are changing, how the internet and technology is changing everything we know. We also talk about how frustrating it can be. It's not all good, believe me. And if you have a computer, if you have technology, you know it's frustrating. But if we can just, you know, get it to work, amazing things can happen. Joshua in Burlington, New Jersey. Hi, Joshua.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the States. Sounds like you had a great trip.
I had a very nice vacation. If you go on a river boat cruise, it's so slow that you can't help but relax because there's nothing to do but just watch the river go by. Took me about 4 days to realize that. I was going crazy for 4 days. Anyway, what can I do for you?
So help me spend some money.
Yeah, okay.
I'm looking to get an entertainment system. Should I get a sound bar? Should I get a receiver? Should I get speakers? The speakers, should they be wireless?
There's only one reason to get a sound bar, and that's because you just don't want the complexity of an actually good sounding surround system. Sound bars are a compromise. They're a good compromise. It's going to be a lot better than the sound coming out of your TV, but a sound bar doesn't surround you. It's in front of you on a bar, and they simulate surround sound with computer modeling and imaging. And yeah, it works, but it doesn't work as well as having two speakers in front of you, a center channel above the TV or below it, a left and right surround, maybe even a back surrounds. You know, 5.1, a subwoofer, 5.1, 7.1, or even 5.2, those are all going to sound better, even if you don't get great speakers. But in order to do that, you need to get an AV receiver. You also need a wire. There have to be wires going to the speakers. And for a lot of people, they just don't want that. And a soundbar is a good compromise. Our home theater guru, Scott Wilkinson, recommends a Andrew Jones-designed soundbar for Pioneer. It's under $500. Not very expensive. I think it includes a subwoofer and probably some additional hardware to interpret. And I have a soundbar system from Sonos that, you know, it's okay, but really, you really want, I mean, it. I guess the question is, how devoted are you to surround sound? How important is that to you?
Oh, it's nothing, you know, extremely important. I mean, I have a TV and the speakers out of
it's
it.
It's a good start. It's a good start. I have both. And I really, when I want to really enjoy a movie, having a real surround system does make a difference. I think it really does.
Yeah, I was looking at the Sonos. It looks pretty good, but
it's very expensive. The Sonos are great, but they're not great for that reason. They're great. They are wireless, so that's one thing. It does eliminate the wires. But when you add this, and I have one, a soundbar, subwoofer, and the two surround speakers, you're talking $1,500, I think, at least. Mm. Now, the advantage of Sonos is it's more than just a surround sound system. You now can use the Sonos software. You can get music from Spotify or Google or Pandora. You can access your own library. It is a very smart internet-connected sound system. And I certainly love Sonos. I have Sonos in almost every room of my house. It's just great. But it's a pricey way to go for a surround sound, unless you want those other features.
And is there an entertainment system that you would recommend? I hear sometimes one I was actually looking at was an Onkyo.
Onkyo's excellent. One way to go is get something called a home theater in a box. This is the idea is to make it simple. They'll sell you a Blu-ray DVD player. Built into that is the kind of this basic AV receiver that powers the surround. And usually they'll have left and right front speakers, a center channel for voice, and then two left and right back speakers, surround speakers. So that's five. And then a subwoofer is 0.1. That sounds superb. For a long time I've said, even if, to me, instead of a sound bar, I don't think that the idea of having sounds come from behind you is all that compelling. A few movies, it makes a difference. The helicopter comes from over your left shoulder to your right. Yeah, that's nice. It doesn't really detract from the movie if it doesn't do that. What makes it sound good is good speakers and a good subwoofer. So almost prefer, instead of a sound bar, that you just got stereo speakers and a sub. And that's very easy to do. And the wires then are all near the TV. They don't have to go under the carpet or across the room or anything for the surrounds. I would almost prefer to see that if you can't afford a 5-1 sound system or you don't want the complexity of it. Left, right, or even a 3-1 system, which is left, right, center, and sub. That's going to give you 90%, I think, of the value. What you really want is good sound. That's more important than the fact that it's coming from all around you. You want a good bass so that when, you know, there's a rumble, a truck coming, a tank coming, you feel it. You want good, clear reproduction. The nice thing about a center channel, especially as you get older, is the dialogue, all the voices come from the center channel. And because we have good directional hearing when it comes to higher frequency stuff. So you can tell if a voice is not coming from the person's mouth. So it's nice to have a center channel right there in the middle of the TV set. You can also boost it a little bit. So if it's hard to hear because there's so much going on, having a little center channel is a nice thing to do. So Andrew Jones, soundbar from Pioneer, excellent. Home theater in a box, Onkyo makes them. A lot of companies make them. Those are good. I went out and I bought an Onkyo receiver, an AV receiver. There's some reasons to do that. It gives you more inputs. You can have, I have 7 HDMI in and 1 HDMI out. You can also do better things with audio. And then you can buy any separates that you want, any speakers that you want. So you can, the sky's the limit. If you want to spend $100,000 on Bowers and Wilkins speakers, you can. If you want to spend $400 on a nice set of a Pioneer surround sound system, you can. And you can even upgrade it over time. So a soundbar to me is, I'm not a big fan.
The wife comes back on Tuesday with from her parents. Maybe I'll be surprising her.
Well, and by the way, I don't want to be sexist, but really sound bars have to do with the spousal acceptance factor. And the spouse could be a man or a woman. I'm not going to be sexist here, but I'm just saying a lot of times guy sets up his man cave. He's got wires all over the place. It's a little funky looking, but it sounds great. Maybe the spouse isn't so thrilled about that.
Well, this is my family room, so.
You don't want wires because people trip. So, but I got to say, most of the time, wireless is not going to sound as good because it's just not as much bandwidth.
Right.
So wired is always better. Leave out, if you want to leave out the complexity in the wires, leave out the surround, the back surrounds. I don't think you really need them. I think a good left, right, center sub, that sounds great. And then you'll feel like you're in a movie theater. Even if you have a smaller screen or not a great TV, it turns out the music, the sound effects, those are what make a movie come alive. And so good sound, to me, is very important.
Excellent.
You want your heart to start pounding when that Game of Thrones theme comes on. Bum, 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 bum. You want the bum, 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 bum. You want to get excited. And it does. Now I got you. So I didn't give you some big, but Onkyo's good. Onkyo's always been good. I have a Denon receiver. I think Marantz and Denon are very, very good. But you can always go with the Andrew Jones. If you look on Amazon, just search Andrew Jones soundbar and you can find it. And it's very affordable and very easy to set up. It's just not going to get your heart pounding. I want my heart to pound. Hey, I appreciate the call. Let's see if we can get one more in before I have to run here. Brandon is on the line from Springfield. Hello, Brandon.
Springfield, Missouri, if you want to be.
Oh, the home of the Simpsons.
Yeah, wait.
What?
I didn't know that. Okay. I'm going to try to make this quick since it's getting close to the end. But
you got 67 seconds, my friend.
Okay. I have all of these. I have, my computer is complicated. I have speakers in and headphones in. And yes, I can plug my headphones into the speakers, but I don't like to do that, so I'm going to get a sound mixer, probably a Lesis, for a sound mixer that I can manage that. But I need a not a condenser mic.
Are you doing podcasts? What are you doing?
Microphone.
Are you doing podcasts?
I might start doing YouTube.
You want to do Minecraft videos?
Yeah.
How did I know that?
But I need, like, a computer microphone, kind of like what you have.
Yes.
That has an XLR output.
Really? You want XLR? Because then you'd have to have an XLR to USB adapter.
No, actually, no, I don't. Because if I have...
Oh, because you put it in the Alesis. Okay, yeah.
The Alesis, yeah.
Yeah, does that have USB out, the Alesis?
I wasn't planning on USB.
Yeah, this is... Okay, now we got really complicated, and I have 4 seconds. Hang on, we'll talk after the show. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week! All right, Brandon. You can't connect that Alesis to your computer unless it has a digital interface.
Well, I was thinking not to the computer, but I can have the output to the computer be an aux send, but the Alesis manage what goes to like my speakers or my headphones.
Yeah. So you're going to take the audio jack out of your computer. Plug that into the mixer, and when you record, that you'll use the microphone jack of your computer for the recording.
I was thinking I plug my microphone into the mixer.
Yes, and then how does the mixer get to the computer?
With an aux send.
Yeah.
And then
it goes into the analog input on your computer, right? On your sound card. Yeah. It's okay.
But I need an XLR computer microphone.
Yeah. Oh, there's lots. I would. I think a good hundred is $100 or not? Okay, can you spend that much?
Yeah.
I get a Shure, Shure SM58.
Well, I'm not thinking of like those handheld microphones.
Well, you put it on a stand. You put it on a stand.
1 second. Let me bring up Internet Explorer. Amazon.com.
Yeah, and all mics are. Both could you could always handheld any mic or put it on a stand. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The SM58 is cheap. It's hard to break. It's a dynamic mic, so it doesn't need power. And it gives you a very good sound. I mean, what we use, if you want to know what I'm using, what we use is the Heil PR40.
Yeah. I was thinking you'd use Heil.
Those are $350 bucks, though. Now, that's, by the way, for a good microphone, that's pennies. I've worked in radio stations that had Neumann mics that cost $1,500. And by the way, they didn't sound any better. In fact, they sounded worse.
Huh. Well,
so you could go to Heil Sound and get a mic, but they're expensive. A Shure SM58 is cheap, really hard to break. Your kid's sister can get it and bang nails with it. In fact, that's what Letterman uses or used to use for his warm-up act. So before the show would begin, Letterman would come out and talk to the audience, and he used to have a SM58 on the mic cable, and he'd swing it around, he'd bang it. The thing was dented on the top. He couldn't break. You can't break them. So that's a nice feature of the SM58. It's $100.
Okay, well.
But, in my opinion, what you should do is you should go to B&H. B&H sells audio equipment. There's others, too, Sweetwater. And look for Behringer makes them, but there are a couple of companies that make mixers that are designed for your computer. They have a USB connector. That's better because you don't have an analog jack and all the audio frequency interference and radio interference that comes in from the computer. You're better off getting a USB interface to your computer. You plug one thing in your computer, the mixer digitizes it and puts it in there. And then you can use normal mics and all of that stuff. So I would look at and they make podcaster kits that come with a microphone, everything. Well, they're not very expensive.
I've always having a mixer to control all my inputs and outputs.
Yeah, no, this gives you the mixer.
Cool for me.
Yeah, no, it gives you the mixer. It's still a mixer, but it's connected to the computer, not via analog jacks. You don't want to do that. That's noisy.
Yeah.
By USB.
Okay.
Take a look at that.
What was the product name for?
Behringer makes one, Behringer. They're not super great, but they're good. And for the price, they're good. You know, wanting good stuff, we're talking thousands and thousands of bucks. You could do what I do, spend a lot of money, or you could focus on the content.
Well, yeah. I'm just thinking doing that would make it easier for me.
Yes. Yes, and if you get USB, you'll be happy because it's much better sound quality.
And honestly, the inspiration for me to do this is watching you guys do it at Twit. Because like when you hear the background people mixing.
It's fun, isn't
stuff
it?
And mixing. Yeah, it looks fun.
How old are you?
12.
I think this is a great thing for you to get into. You're going to learn great skills. You're going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, well.
Good luck.
Thanks.
All right. Take care. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today and Tech News Tonight, and of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.